I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The Killer Bees!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. It's the assistant to the regional manager, Joe George, behind the glass. It is a Wednesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. How's your UCL feeling, Blankers?
Better than Lance McCullers is. Evidently, although, as you pointed out in our video today, that I used my go-to hand, my left hand.
Used your
He's right-handed,
arm.
But not so good.
Yeah, actually, I'm taking this as some good news. If you have not heard, if you've been living under a rock for the last 46 minutes, Lance McCullers said he had an MRI yesterday, revealed a small muscle strain. Chandler Rome reporting this, Brian McTaggart reported this. I mean, Lance McCullers reported this. He was having the media around his locker saying this. He is shut down for a few weeks, opening day, out of the question for Lance McCullers. I'll spin it like a spin doctor here in a second, but let's hear from the horse's mouth, Lance McCullers. Not a workhorse, though. He's not a workhorse. We'll hear from the horse's mouth, just not a workhorse. Lance McCullers Jr. on the injury and being shut down.
Yeah, you know, I had a great offseason and was incredibly excited for the year. Felt like was in an amazing spot physically and got to camp early. Threw a bullpen here last Tuesday, and unfortunately, after that bullpen, nothing during the bullpen raised any red flags, just after the bullpen into the evening and then to the next day. I just had some elbow soreness and things of that nature. And, you know, we've been obviously I've been a little bit upset. You know, I was really looking forward to a great start to the camp and great start to the season. Anytime this happens, it's very frustrating for me, for especially for our team, you know, our fan base. And I just wanted to have, you know, a great year and get off to a great start. And unfortunately, it didn't happen. So taking a couple days to, you know, collect myself and our thoughts. And it's not something serious. We had MRI last night. We went ahead and did an MRI. And everything is structurally good. Probably best case scenario, my UCL is good. Just a small muscle strain. And it's going to set me back a little bit. But it shouldn't be anything like last year. It should be something where hopefully I'm playing catch in a couple weeks.
More words in that little soundbite from Lance McCullers or innings pitch this year?
Ooh, that's gonna be a tight one.
Can we get a text to type to text, whatever it's called, and figure out the word count on that soundbite for Lance McCullers?
Let me see if I have an intern.
Yeah, let's see. We'll do it later in the show. We're not like gonna do this over the next 30 seconds. But I would be interested to know how many words that was. And then trying to have an over-under with innings pitched on the year. What were they listening to, by the way? Very poppy.
You know what I was thinking initially, though? It wasn't, but you know what would have been appropriate? If it was the Black Eyed Peas, I got a feeling.
It did sound a little bit like
and
that.
And I thought, oh my God, he's got a feeling that his arm ain't right.
Yeah. There you go. Look at that on the fly.
It was, woo, bad.
It was it was very poppy. It was very teen poppy. Maybe something you can catch on the Hot 40 or whatever.
Or the Wheelhouse.
What is your concern here
for Lance McCullers? And I told you this.
Two days in a row. You were on yesterday, Lance McCullers today.
Well, and you and I had this conversation before camp even started when we were going back and forth about, you know, Lance McCullers, and the listeners were worried about his value and what he was making. And I had the overall concern that ever since 17, when he overexerted everything, and I know he had Tommy John after that, that his arm might never be the same and we might not see the same health-wise Lance McCullers. And it always, as you know, it's really been a hot button with me how long it took from him from the time he left the White Sox series in the playoffs to the time he returned to the mound three quarters of the next season in. And just the mystery around it and what caused it and is it still there and whatever. And now here we go again. And now the first thing that's going through my mind is see you in August. Like, you know, is there something more you're going to do this time as opposed to last time? Or are we just going to be left on eggshells for the rest of the season to wonder when and if we see Lance again?
Yeah. I mean, we know what caused it. Him throwing. Like, him throwing is what causes all of his injuries.
I'm just saying,
like,
is there something wrong medically? I know structurally, but what is causing it in his arm that keeps rearing its head?
I mean, they said a small muscle strain. Like, if we want to get to the nitty-gritty, and I understand what you're saying, it's like two kind of different things. The reason that I'm a little bit more optimistic today than I was yesterday is, one, like, Lance McCullers isn't your best pitcher, whereas Jordan Alvarez is your best pitcher. Two, I kind of enter every single year with Lance McCullers knowing he's only going to pitch, like, at maximum 120 to 130 innings. So it's like, okay, if I'm going to get one Lance McCullers injury a year, just go ahead and knock it out in the first half of the season, kind of like last year. Now, did he come back at full strength last year? Was he 100% Lance McCullers? I thought in the regular season he was good. I thought in the postseason he was a little bit shaky. He had like one good start and then had some shaky starts after that. So you wanted like a fresh Lance McCullers, 100% up to his capability to pitch very, 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 very good. But going into the year, I don't assume Lance McCullers is going to make it through and pitch 30, 32 starts. I don't expect him to go 160, 170 innings. I go into the year with Lance McCullers, maybe part of it's because he gave me the injury discount with his contract, where I only expect 120 innings out of him. 20 starts would be fantastic for Lance McCullers. So that it happens early in the year, it's like, okay, let him build up to full strength by the summer. Hopefully he doesn't sustain another injury by the time the fall rolls around and you're into the postseason. So like, that's the spin of optimism that I take on this. Also, one huge difference I think between Lance McCullers and Jordan Alvarez is we have a diagnosis with Lance McCullers. He went and had an MRI. The MRI said that there was no structural damage. There was nothing wrong with the UCL. There's just a small muscle strain. So, of course, you're going to baby Lance McCullers because Lance McCullers is kind of soft. So you're going to baby Lance McCullers. You're going to try to get him at full strength, and then you're going to try to work him up to when he can rejoin this club, I don't know, late spring, early summer, somewhere around there, which is fine because the Astros have five other starters that I think are really good, and this is going to give a chance for Hunter Brown to be making a start every fifth day. It's going to give us an opportunity to see Jose Urquidy make a start every fifth day.
See what Forrest Whitley has in camp, too.
I don't think he's making the big league team by spring training.
I didn't think he was before.
But
now if he pitches well in spring training, there's an opportunity for him.
Seth Martinez,
and we get to see more of him. Seth Martinez.
Yeah, I think that's what it's going to come down to. Because I think that the Gage guy that they picked up from Toronto, they gave him like this signing bonus. Because apparently he was going to go play in Japan. But the Astros gave him a signing bonus as they claimed him off of waiver. So I think that they actually like him to be their loogie. Like, he's going to be their loogie. So now this opens up another spot on the pitching staff, which would go to Seth Martinez. Now, Forrest Whitley's time is coming. Like, he might be second off of that, like, pitching staff right now. He might be the 15th pitcher, and you're going to carry 13. So, like, he's climbing. He's probably going to make an appearance this year. I just don't think it's by opening day.
If you're adding an extra arm on opening day for the bullpen, then it's Seth Martinez. If you're in need of luxury has its advantages, and the Astros have a luxury in starting pitching. But if they didn't, you might be looking at Forrest Whitley and saying, hey, we're going to be a starter down. You're a starter. You say you feel as healthy as you felt in the last 4 years. If you pitch relatively well this spring, there's an opportunity for you, depending on what we do with our starters. Because to me, the whole McCullers thing is easier to digest because of the fact that you are in such a great position with your starting pitching. And also because a year ago, you did this for Justin Verlander. You basically said, hey, we're going to block out some time for you. You're not going to have to pitch as much. Because I agree with you. He's fragile. I'm not going to say he's soft. I'm just going to say he's fragile. And because I have deep concerns about everything being connected in that arm, and just because you had Tommy John surgery doesn't mean that you repaired every single bit of that arm. And there's breakdown concerns. So you give him some time off, and then when he does come back, you go to the six-man rotation, and just like you did for Verlander, you do this with the notion that he doesn't have to pitch as much so that he can pitch his best when you need him the most.
Yeah, he's probably an injury away, like another at least one more injury away from being on this 26-man roster. I mean, like just going into spring training, and also Forrest Whitley had an ERA of like 7 last year, so he would have to show something. But there's other guys on the 40-man roster that they might actually have in front of Forrest Whitley, like Brandon Bielak. Like, he's still on the 40-man roster. Somebody who has innings, somebody who's pitched in the big leagues. I'm not saying that Brandon Bielak's very good, but I think that they would call up Brandon Bielak before they call up Forrest Whitley, especially from, like, a starting pitching perspective. They have a couple of other dudes that, like, why are we talking about these guys? Sean Dubin, J.P. France, that sort of thing. But the reason that I look at Lance McCullers and Yordan Alvarez from two different point of views, really, is because of the diagnosis. Like, he had an MRI. They revealed what the MRI is saying. They're telling you that there's a muscle strain, a small muscle strain, which is okay. That this happens from time to time with pitchers especially and baseball players. So, Yordan, it's more about the fear of the unknown. Because, look, I firmly believe that they've had MRIs with Yordan.
Sure.
I firmly believe that they've had X-ray imaging. I actually even trust the doctors a little bit that there is nothing that the imaging is showing you. But from, like, our peace of mind, being on the outside, not being within the walls there at West Palm Beach, Florida, or wherever they're at Minute Maid Park, the unknown is we have no idea what's going on with Yordan Alvarez's hand, other than it's chronic and it happens a lot. And it rears its ugly face a lot. Lance McCullers' injury could even be more severe than Yordan Alvarez's hand. But we know the prognosis. He had an MRI. There is nothing structurally wrong. There's a small strain. They're going to shut him down for a little bit. And because I don't anticipate Lance McCullers ever throwing 130, 140 innings in a Major League Baseball season, I'm glad it's happening now as opposed to July.
Yeah, as long as it's nothing more than that and he, you know, the opportunity to have a full recovery or to bounce back, not need any kind of medical procedure, that's fantastic. I'm very leery because of everything we've been through with Lance. But like I said, because it's the Astros, because of all the other pitchers that they have, this is easier to digest. And you're right, from a Yordan perspective, look, we maybe have more concern than a lot of other people. And I watched some of the local news where they were just like, ho-hum, Yordan's hand was sore. He'll be fine. You just don't know. And it's because we don't know, because there isn't too much out there and you don't know. Like any team that has any kind of smarts about them, they're going to do every bit of due diligence on anything medical with any one of their players, especially one of their key players, so that they know every possibility for that injury. And I think that they know they're just not telling us, but I think they know damn well that there was a more than one medical expert that was telling them, hey, look, this is the prognosis. Best case scenario, don't need surgery, rest, blah, blah, blah. He recovers 100%. Worst case scenario, keeps rearing its head, keeps coming back. We might have to do something different, take other measures. But I believe they know, they're just not telling us, but it's obviously a concern because, again, these two guys parallel in one aspect of their careers is they seem to be a bit fragile and you seem to have to worry when they have any kind of injury pop up.
Soft.
I'm not saying that.
Why don't you want to say soft?
Because I think that from a toughness and tenacity standpoint, that can be misconstrued.
Yordan got hit by a baseball last year whenever he was on third base, and he collapsed like he got sniped by the dude that shot JFK.
Okay.
He did.
I don't disagree with you on the outfield collision, because that didn't look like anything, and that ended up. And then the one game where he just left with indigestion or whatever, and then he was rushed to a hospital and then sat out the next day, and we were all left to worry again. It all adds up to where you do have more concerns about those two guys than, dare I say, anybody else on that roster. If they had something like this, if this was somebody else, you'd be like, okay, maybe they were doing too much throwing before the season or too much swinging before the season. They'll be fine in a couple of days. With these two guys, you're like, see you in August.
713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line. Lance McCullers not going to start the season with the Astros on opening day. He's got a strain in his arm. What is the level of concern for you? And which one is more concerning, Lance McCullers or Yordan Alvarez? Astros drama, always, baby. 713-780-3776, the HRP listener line. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Mr. Brostash, Yordan hit a shot that landed somewhere in Greenway Plaza. with that same hand. Don't be too concerned, which is a fair point. I mean, he had a chronic hand injury last year, you know, spent a time on the IL around the summer, around the All-Star break. Went through a little bit of a power slump whenever he was complaining about his sore hand again in the fall, but then came alive in the postseason. So it is a fair point to Mr. Brostash. To me, it's not the severity of the injury that bothers me with Yordan. It's more the unknown and that it continues to occur.
Yeah, but you're right. Because let me rephrase what I said last segment. I'll see Lance in August. I firmly believe we're going to see Yordan, and he's going to be in the lineup. He just might also be out of the lineup periodically while this seems to be a nagging injury that's not going to go away. And you're right. The biggest concern to me is, look, he was shagging flies in the outfield, and he's doing other things. Well, that's great. But the most important thing is what Yordan does at the plate for this ball club in the middle of this lineup where he needs to be. And it's devastating when he's in there, and it would be devastating if he was not. And I would like to know, just like with the Lance McCullers injury, is there a way to solve this? We talked about if the hammock bone is needed and if that's something that they could do with
that. Can't be the hammock. It'd be broken.
Well, okay, so then if it's not that, then again, I know that he's experiencing discomfort, and I know that discomfort's the magic word with the Astros. I'm sure Lance had a lot of discomfort, too. But how do we rectify the discomfort once and for all as much as possible? I don't know. But I do know that when you look at Yordan Alvarez, this is the same feeling I have with Lance McCullers. If this was a different injury, if this was the other hand or something else going on, I'd be like, okay, these little, you know, nicks and things pop up with professional athletes, let's just give it some time. It'll be fine. But because it's the same reoccurring injury with both guys, there's more concern because it hasn't been rectified. It hasn't been fixed. You've been dealing with it in the past. Now we're dealing with it again. And now you're left to try and figure out how much time are we going to be dealing with this time in this season when it's hyper important. You have so much on the line because of the fact that you don't have Verlander. The lineup's different. You still, you know, you're trying to keep moving on and moving forward. And you can't really do that, not with the uncertainty of these two guys.
Yeah. I wonder what Pat Mahomes had in the second half of the Super Bowl. What did they load him up with? Like, what is it called? It's like the T word or whatever. Basically, it's like a high dose.
Tortadil.
Yeah.
I think they banned that, actually.
Did they? That's too bad. I would really like a little bit of that for Lance McCullers' right elbow and for Yordan Alvarez's left hand. Houston Dab King. No, it's actually my hip now.
Oh boy,
the hip bone connected to the ankle bone or something. Houston Dab King,
50?
Yeah, man, I'm banged up. I'm struggling. I'm not gonna lie. Houston Dab King, I wonder what he does in his free time. He says, so are we going to a 5-man rotation? Yeah, I don't see the Astros using a 6-man rotation with like a
rotation.
Brandon Bielak. They're not going to a 4-man rotation.
Kidding. I mean, it's illogical. You're going to a 5-man rotation like every other team in baseball.
4-man rotation is not logical.
I was kidding.
Okay. But then you said logical.
Well, because logical is every team goes to a 5-man rotation. They have the luxury of going to 6, but, you know, the fact of the matter is they have a luxury that most teams in Major League Baseball don't have, so they can do a lot of different things, but I don't think that they're going to go to 6 right away, but maybe they will. I don't know. But who was your sixth starter then?
It'd probably be Bielak. A lot of people would want to be Forrest Whitley, but I bet you it'd be Bielak. I think Bielak right now on the depth chart would be the sixth starter on this team.
Again.
Now that McCullers is going to be on the IL to start the year.
Whitley's got to have a good spring. But if Whitley has a good spring, I'd like to see Whitley start the season as the sixth starter and see what he's got.
I don't think they're going to have a 6-man rotation. I don't think that they're going to use one of those guys as a starter. And then looking at the schedule real quick, the Astros have an off day every week, which is kind of rare in baseball, where you have an off day every week. Like, they have an off day almost every Thursday all the way until the summer. So, like, that makes it a little bit easier to navigate. So then maybe you get Lance McCullers back, you know, May, June, and then you can go to that 6-man rotation. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Which of these concerns you the most? 7869 just laid it on the list. He just made Bad Take Boulevard. He sent in one of the worst texts I've ever seen. You consider releasing or move Lance McCullers now? Absolutely not. Like,
ridiculous.
You can't. One, Major League Baseball contracts are guaranteed. So if you're releasing Lance McCullers, he'd be claimed like that, by the way.
And you're still paying him.
You put him on waivers, he gets claimed. Somebody else has to assume the contract. Right. And I think he would get claimed. So it's basically a salary dump at that point. Still not doing that. Lance McCullers at his very best can be very good. Lance McCullers at his very best can finish top 10 in the American League Cy Young. He can be an all-star pitcher in baseball as well. Absolutely not selling Lance McCullers when he's at an all-time low. It's bad business. It's bad return on investment. It's just not something that Dana Brown would do.
No, I agree with you. And I think this was in response to our conversation the other day when it was brought up, and we said no then, we'll say no now. Look, it's a very affordable contract, and maybe that the things that we talked about the other day are true, that they had concerns, and they do their medicals, and they do their due diligence, and it was a, you know, back-scratching on both ways contract where, look, if he performs to the top of his abilities and doesn't get hurt, there's a chance that you're getting a huge steal and you have to renegotiate. But if he has times where he's going to miss time, that's part of why he's not trying to break the bank and get this massive contract. So as you look at the situation right now, it seems more and more like this is a very apropos contract for who Lance McCullers is right now and who he's going to be going forward. When he's on the hill, you and I both agree. You have a lot of confidence in this guy. He's been there, done that, and his stuff translates wherever they play, and he has major league stuff. But the fact that you never know, and you really never know, especially going back to that White Sox series, he could be cooking at the top of his game, and in a moment's notice, boom, now something's up again, and now you don't know how long he's going to be out.
That's who he is. I mean, that's quite frankly who he is at this point of his career. A couple of Twitchers just made the list, too. Yesterday, the other day, we had the Texter Twitcher War, the Civil War.
Oh, yeah, yeah, they hate each other.
Which the Twitch won by a mile. We've already had one Texter make the list of Bad Take Boulevard. Now we have two Twitchers make the list of Bad Take Boulevard. Dylan says getting rid of Lance is fine. What are you talking about? Like, Lance McCullers is going to pitch 120 innings and be one of the top five, top six starters on this team. Why are you just getting rid of that? It makes absolutely no sense. And then E says McCullers in the package deal for Salvador Perez. Why would Kansas City, a rebuilding team, who's very, very, like, they're going with the youth movement, want a clear salary? Why would they trade for Lance McCullers? Why would they trade a veteran for a veteran?
Because the only thought would be, well, maybe they can move him again before the trade deadline. But it doesn't make any sense, because I know Salvador Perez is making a lot more money. And as he gets older and he's been hurt, that there's less chance that they can move him. But if you could find a home for him and then try and repurpose Lance McCullers before the deadline, I'm just trying to justify why the Royals would even consider that, but they're not going to do it.
Yeah. Like, why would anyone trade for Lance McCullers?
No one would.
So, like, that's where it's like everyone wants to be.
You know, somebody would.
But trade for Lance McCullers.
It'd be pennies on the dollar.
Yes, but people want to trade Lance McCullers for what they think peak Lance McCullers value brings
to
back.
People.
But that's not how this works. You can't be hurt and then be traded for a player that's not hurt.
Do people not remember what just happened with Carlos Correa and how many physicals it took before he finally got a contract and a deal? Every team's going to do their medicals. They're going to do their due diligence. They're going to have their concerns. And so it's going to be really tough to trade him. You're right. Pennies on a dollar. Someone will take a flyer on him. But it ain't going to be for, you know, a whole lot in return.
The Twitch is turning on the Twitch. Coog says Dylan is a texter. He infiltrated the Twitch. So now you have the Twitchers turning on the Twitchers. Day One Donna says we're going to bury the Lance in the H. The question is, when are we burying Lance in the H? Is it going to be before opening day? Is it going to be in 10 years? Because I think right now the favorite is sooner rather than later. I mean, this dude can't stay healthy. Which of these two are you more concerned about, Joe George? Lance McCullers, who will not start on the start with the team on opening day. He's got a strain in his, as Joel would say, his URL in his right arm. And then
that was not for radio. That was not something that you had to put out there.
What happened?
Because I was singing that in a break.
Twitch saw it.
Well, to be honest, you did say it in the first segment.
There you go. You said it on the air, too. It was for radio. Anyways, he has a bum UCL, and then Yordan has a bum hand. Which of the two is more concerning?
Honestly, I don't think it's even close. It's Alvarez, because I am at the point where I'm in of the grief stage. I'm at acceptance with Lance McCullers. I have accepted that he is not going to be active for 162 games, that he is not going to be there at the beginning or at the end or in the middle. Like, he is going to miss time.
Yeah.
I'm not at acceptance for Yordan Alvarez's hand injury that this is just fine. So it's all Alvarez. Alvarez.
Yeah, I think we're kind of unanimous there. Is Lance McCullers entering the point of how I've described Forrest Whitley, where I'm no longer expecting anything from Forrest Whitley, but I will not deny, like, his existence. I know that he exists. I'm just not expecting anything from him. Is Lance McCullers to that point where we're not going to expect anything from him, but we're also not going to deny his existence?
No, I can't, because you don't have Justin Verlander this year. Oh. It's easier to do when you have insurance policies, you know, upon insurance policies, to where it's not as big of a deal as it would be for other teams. But now that you've moved on from Verlander, and rightfully so, he was already earmarked to play a bigger role for this team this year. So now you've moved on from the Cy Young Award winner, and now one of the guys that you were leaning on to be in the top of your rotation has injury concerns. Now it's more of a concern, and there's less of a luxury and less of the ability to be able to buy enough time like they did a year ago for him to take his own sweet time and be ready in August. And so you're going to be monitoring it a lot more carefully and closely. You're going to be hoping he comes back a lot quicker than you were a year ago because you need him a lot more than you did a year ago.
The only reason why I would say I guess the level of concern, it's not maybe team-wise, it's more from McCullers, is that you've got guys like all of them, Javier Fromber or Urquidy and Hunter Brown coming up this year, have all pitched or are going to pitch more than they ever have with these deep playoff runs. You know, you were seven deep last year. Now you're six deep. Well, now you're five deep.
Yep.
So it's the next injury and the trickle-down effect from Lance being hurt is if what if Urquidy, you know, just is banged up. What if he has soreness in a week?
Yep. To me, it reduces the margin for error. Yeah. Like, I think the Astros can get by without Lance McCullers. I mean, the Astros, like, if you go to the, you start fast forward to the playoffs, you're really only using a four-man rotation anyways. You still got Fromber. You still have Javier. You got a combination of Garcia, Urquidy, and Hunter Brown. Now, the margin for error becomes a lot smaller. And you also have one of the best bullpens in all of baseball. But if that bullpen starts to get more attacks, can they be as effective as they were? It's a trickle-down effect that the texture was talking about yesterday with Verlander, and now it's times two because Lance McCullers is going to be out for a period of time. I think it's the margin for error that really hurts. Because if you go to the playoffs and you have any four of this current five-man rotation without Lance McCullers, I still think it's capable of winning it all.
Yeah, the schedule changes. You don't need as many.
But
different set of circumstances. But you got to get there and be in the right position. He was one of the guys that was supposed to help get you there in the right position.
And the attrition. Like, it's impossible for, I mean, it's been done before, but it's nearly impossible for a single five-man rotation to make every single start without an injury, without a trip to the injured list. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Astros opening day countdown. We're asking you a question a day until Astros opening day. Only 26 shows until opening day for the Astros. Which Astro player takes the biggest step in their career this season? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Astros opening day. Just 26 shows until then. Cannot wait. Defending champs, hashtag ready to reign, baby. Today's question, which Astros player takes the biggest step in their career this season, question mark, period. Who is that for you? Which Astro young player has to do a... Which Astro young player takes the biggest step this... I guess it doesn't have to be a young player. But which one takes the biggest step in their career?
Well, it's one of two for me. And I'd love to see it from the simple standpoint of then it will validate if you want to go long-term and big money with him in the case of Jeremy Peña. But I got to see it for another season, and I got to see him doing it like he did in the postseason and like he did for the majority of the year last year when he got going. And the other one would be Hunter Brown. Hunter Brown could take that big step for his career that proves he's a major league starting pitcher, and then you start to be able to have the fun discussion of how good can he be? Can he be a top of the rotation guy? Is he just a 4-5 starter type guy? But if he validates that he belongs in the bigs and he still has that unbelievable stuff, then there's a lot of encouraging discussions to be had about one, locking him up, but also two, how good can he be?
Which Astro takes the biggest step in their career this year? 713-780-3776. I think when you look at the pitching staff, there's quite a few that you could talk about here. Like Fromber, he just finished top five in American League Cy Young voting. I don't think that there's that much left for him. Like, he could win a Cy Young, but that's not that far removed from just finishing, like, top five. Jose Urquidy, I think, is somebody that you can throw into this conversation. Like, he's kind of always been a back end of the rotation pitcher. What if he takes the next step and all of a sudden wins 17 or 18 games and looks like a top half of the rotation pitcher? So I think you can include Jose Urquidy in this conversation. Luis Garcia, who's been very good, like, what if he takes another step where all of a sudden he has a year where, like, Christian Javier had last year in terms of, like, wow, okay, he has another level to his game. Christian Javier can even belong on this list because Javier, what he did when he pitched was amazing. He pitched less than 150 innings, started 25 games. What if he pitches 175, 180 innings and starts 32 games? I think you have a potential Cy Young. So Javier, who last year wasn't even qualifying for the American League ERA award because he just barely missed the innings pitch minimum, I think he could be somebody who finishes top 10 in Cy Young voting this year. So you can even put Javier in that conversation. Brian Abreu, like, what's his role going to be? Brian Abreu was brilliant last year, was brilliant in the playoffs. I don't think he's going to have the role where he's taking that next step, because probably the next step for him is being a closer and saving 40 games a year. Like, that's what's going to require for him to take that huge step forward, and he's not going to do it with this team unless there's injury, because he's probably fourth on the pecking order, maybe even fifth. Like, Ryan Pressly obviously is ahead of him. Rafael Montero, who they gave the big money to, is currently ahead of him. Hector Neris is currently maybe ahead of him. Ryan Stanek is currently maybe ahead of him. So best case scenario, like, he's your seventh inning guy, maybe even your fifth inning guy. So I don't think that the opportunity will be there for Brian Abreu. Then you look at the offensive side, you have a lot of the old guard, like Jose Altuve. He's been there, done that. He's won an MVP. Alex Bregman's finished top five in MVP twice. Yordan Alvarez was one of the best players in baseball last year. How about Kyle Tucker? Kyle Tucker yesterday, Joe George with the Cash Him or Trash Him, he said, what if he finishes top three in AL MVP voting? That's taking a huge step forward if you're Kyle Tucker. I think that Jeremy Pena is also somebody that you talk about here. I thought Jeremy Pena had a really good regular season last year. Would you have liked the on-base percentage to be better? Yeah, absolutely. Could the average go up a little bit? Yeah, absolutely. But he had a very good OPS, good slugging. I think he's capable of hitting 30 home runs, and I think he's capable of winning a Gold Glove. Yeah, he needs to work on the fielding.
Because we were told that when we
joking,
said it.
Slash sarcasm.
I was joking, yes, because we took too much heat when we kept saying how good he was defensively.
I think that the most popular answer here, who could take that big step forward, 713-780-3776, I think most people would say either Jeremy Pena or Hunter Brown. I think it could be very easily be Christian Javier if he finishes top two in American League Cy Young. I think it could be, offensively, I don't know if that guy's there.
I think it's Tuck.
I don't think. Yeah, me too. Like, if I had to pick an offensive guy, like Jeremy Pena last year, he still got room to grow. Like, I think he'll be a 270, 275 hitter at some point in his career. I think he'll be somebody who can eventually work more walks and have an on-base percentage up to like 330. Not sure it's coming this year. I think if he hits second on this team all year long, I think he could hit 30 home runs with Yordan Alvarez protection. But I'm not sure he's going to hit second on this team. And if he's hitting seventh and has protection of Chaz McCormick and Martin Maldonado, I think he'll hit 20 home runs. I think it's that big a difference with the lineup protection, depending on where he's at in the batting order. I think it is Kyle Tucker, too. I think Kyle Tucker has been on the cusp of superstardom in Major League Baseball. I think he can get there at some point in his career. Perhaps it is in 2023.
No shift. The ability, you know, again, to see really good pitches in the middle of a really strong lineup. And like you said, I mean, once he finally did show exactly what he could do, he kind of exploded on the scene and eventually has become, you know, a staple in the middle of this lineup that looks like he's on the cusp. And with his contract coming up in a couple of years, and you know that, you know, he's going to want to get the money that he turned down that Yordan already got, part of that is just continuing to progress. And I believe that, again, with the shift out as well and the lineup he's in, he could have another breakout season where he takes it another level up. That would be amazing. And you'd have a good problem to have on your hands about if you're going to try and re-sign him and what you're going to try and do with him. But I think it's entirely possible. I'm not trying to make this too easy by saying who I said as the popular vote. I just think that because you already have so much talent on this team that's done so much, that the one that the two guys that you're going to keep the eye on the most is the guys that if they do it more so than the other guys do it, it could have an incredible impact across the board for this organization, especially now with McCullers. If McCullers is going to be out for any extended period of time, Hunter Brown slides into the five spot. If Hunter Brown is effective from day one, well, it eases your concerns about when's Lance coming back, and it really proves himself to the team, the organization, and the fan base that, hey, this guy really truly is the real deal, and it helps you out in so many ways. Pena's already been good. You're right. We both agree on that. But he can take it up another notch, or he can at least do what he's done and maybe a little more. Now he's looking at an organization that might offer him a 10-year deal to try and lock him up long-term.
Yeah, I posted that on my Twitter to add Jeremy Branham. Which of these young – because Dana Brown signs rookies. He did it last year with two players. He did it with Michael Harris to an 8-year deal. He did it with Spencer Strider to a 6-year deal. Jeremy Pena, Hunter Brown. Like, would you be okay if Dana Brown signed either one of those guys to a 6- to 8-year deal right now?
Not right now, no.
Well, how do you feel about that, Joe George?
Pena, yes.
Not Hunter Brown?
He hasn't done enough.
See, with Harris, I think, was early in the season last year, in the middle of the season. Yeah. Strider actually came, like, towards the playoffs. Like, it happened towards the end of last year. I think it was in September.
Yeah, and I think that's what you could see with Hunter Brown. Mm-hmm. If he comes out and he looks the way you think he's going to. You know, because one thing that's interesting with Dana Brown, I get the idea of, like, yes, he locked up guys in Atlanta, but he had been in Atlanta. It's like he knew what Michael Harris and Spencer Strider, he knew what their makeup was. And I know he didn't sign those contracts, but they knew what they thought they had, just like the Astros know what they thought they have and Hunter Brown and Jeremy Pena. But Dana Brown doesn't really know that.
See, and the thing is with those two guys, they're not going anywhere. They're still going to be on your team, in your organization, and you still have control of them. So why rush?
Because it becomes more expensive.
It could, conceivably, but that's why I want to be dead sure. I feel really good about Pena right now, but I want to see a little more. So maybe by midseason, I'm ready to say, okay, let's lock him up.
If he signed Pena to an 8-year deal right now, I'd be over the moon. I think it's the way to win in baseball is to buy out free agent years of young players and get them at a low AAV. I tend to agree with you about Hunter Brown. Like, I want to probably see 20 starts from Hunter Brown minimum before I make that decision. Like, is his command going to be as good as advertised? Is he going to be somebody that we feel confident?
And does his arm hold up with the schedule of the major leagues? Yeah. I mean, these are all things that you're going to keep an eye on.
If they sign Jeremy Pena to an 8-year deal right now, though, I'd be thrilled. I'd be so excited.
You, Joe?
Oh, I'd love it. I mean, I love Pena. I think the biggest thing last year, when you saw his adjustment with his swing, when he lowered the kick, and then you saw like him just get that consistently better, making that level of a midseason adjustment was awesome.
I'm just a little bit leery of the fact that it's too soon after. I want to see it for more than a year. I saw it for last year, and I was very, very pleased.
To me, last year is the baseline, though. Like, last year is the baseline Jeremy Pena. I don't think Jeremy Pena will be a worse baseball player than he was last year. And even if he's offensively the same of what he was last year, you got a 715 OPS guy that plays gold glove level shortstop locked in for 8 years. Yes, please.
The only thing with Pena is
defense. At what price?
I mean, it's going to be somewhat affordable because you're getting it done early. It's going to be cheaper now than it'll be in two years.
But if you get the wrong agent that says this guy's got on the same kind of trajectory as, you know, all these different guys. Yeah, Rodriguez and Franco and all these guys going, I'm going to need that kind of money.
But have you seen Julio Rodriguez's contract? It's a bargain. Have you seen Wander Franco's contract? Like, it's huge, $182 million for 11 years. Like, that's really, really high. But that's an AAV of 16.5.
Yeah, if you
like, that's incredibly affordable. I think Julio Rodriguez's AAV is like 18, which like...
It is 18.
What? Like, Julio Rodriguez on an AAV of $18 million?
He could be the
what?
MVP this year.
Yeah, that's insane. That's why you do them early.
Yeah.
What was your concern?
I can't prove this. I feel like he dirts the ball a lot before it gets to first base, and I wonder how much Yuli saved him.
I got you.
Last year, I'm a little curious. It's a little bit of a nervousness of Abreu that like when Altuve struggles or Bregman makes these great plays, Abreu is just not as good defensively as Yuli, of course, and I wonder how much did Yuli cover up some of the rookie mistakes
saw
from Pena. And also, like, and honestly, you're giving him a contract at his peak. He won a Gold Glove, AL MVP, World Series MVP.
Oh, I don't agree with that.
ALCS MVP.
I don't think it's at his peak. Now, you're looking at the postseason accolades, which is awesome, like really, really good. I don't think his regular season was anywhere near his peak.
But I don't think his regular season was near was what his playoff run was. But if his playoff run,
that's kind of my point.
Was this year's regular season? Now you're talking about a whole different level of financial.
I mean, I'd pay him right now.
Security for him.
I think it's a good point though about the balls in the dirt. Like he had a lot of balls in the dirt, and Yuli was great at saving everybody. I mean, one of the best in baseball at doing that.
I think it's going to hurt Altuve.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. First and foremost, it's going to hurt because we already seen him fall off with his throwing. And so many times, Yuli was saving the day for him when he was jump throwing and basically half-assing the throws to first base. And I'm really curious. I saw Abreu doing a lot of these rubber ball against the wall exercises and working on his digs at first base. He's going to need to because, you know what, as much as Yuli fell off at the plate, the value that he had his entire existence with the Astros was his ability, defensively is one thing, but just the way he scooped the baseball saved so many runs for that team.
Yeah, he had one of the best hands for first baseman we've seen in the last 10 years. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line. Who's that Astro player that takes the next step in their career? 713-780-3776. Also, Astro skipper Dusty Baker. He wants to stop talking about last year. Is he worried about a hangover? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Talking about which Astros take the next big step. P. Grady says, what about Jake Meyers? What if he could take the big step and plays like he did before he got hurt?
Look, you and I were talking about it during the break. I'm encouraged by Jake Meyers saying how great he feels and that how healthy he is and how excited he is. I want him to give Chaz a run for his money. You know, you and I have talked about this across a multitude of different position groups with all the different Houston sports teams. I love competition. I love the fact that sometimes some guys need a fire lit under their rear end on a daily basis by someone pushing them. And I want to let the best man win in center field. I know what Chaz did last year. I know how important he was in that playoff run. But that was then. This is now. And as it relates to this season, look, Jake Meyers had a very unbecoming finish to the year. And after the injuries and everything he went through, there was a whole lot of question marks about if he could ever regain that kind of form that he was in when he was first called up. If he's healthy, then and this gives him his best chance to compete, and Dusty has said it's a wide-open competition, then let the games begin, because I would love to see Jake Meyers have a bigger role with this team because he's healthy and capable again. That would be a fantastic kind of extra addition I wasn't expecting.
I think that the battle between Chaz and Jake's actually going to carry on to like June or July. I think both of them are going to get enough times to play. Enough of them, they're going to get enough at-bats. Plus, I don't think Jordan and Brantley are going to play every single day, especially against lefties.
Not so early, not the way Dusty manages.
I think there's going to be multiple times where they're both in the lineup at the same time. I really do. So I think it's going to be a battle that carries on all the way into midsummer before they lock down who their center fielder is going to be, kind of like last year. I mean, you had Jose Siri in the mix. You had Jake in the mix, even though he was hurt. And then you had Chaz in the mix. So I think that both Jake Meyers and Chaz McCormick are going to be fighting for center field really all season long. Some other people weighing in on which player takes the that next step to the next level. Christian Javier will become a household name in 23, says 2669. I thought he was the most underrated pitcher in all of baseball last year. Had one of the best ERAs, had one of the best strikeout per nines, but just didn't have the innings to be on the leaderboard. I thought he was one of the best pitchers in all of baseball last year, the most underrated pitcher in all of baseball. And then I think on top of that, his cherry on top, he had the most underrated pitching performance in playoff history.
Well, and you and I talked about this a few weeks ago when we were talking about, I forget how it was phrased, but who I thought was going to be, whether it be at the end of the year, have the best stats or be the best pitcher for the Astros this year. I firmly believe it's Christian Javier. And I said because of his stuff, because he has both his off-speed pitches and his fastball are at a certain level to where they are more difficult to hit than most in the big leagues. And I know what Fromber did a year ago, and I know the streak, and I know all those things. But what I really love about Javier is he always has the same demeanor. He always seems to be calm, cool, and collected. No situation seems to be too big for him. And then when you start putting into there all the different things that he brings to the table with how great his stuff is, and his ability to be durable and do the things that he's able to do, I believe he's going to be the best pitcher at the end of the year that the Astros, statistically and otherwise, when you look at it at the end of the season for the Astros.
One underrated thing, too, is that the shift. Fromber's a ground ball pitcher. Yeah. Christian Javier's a fly ball pitcher. Yeah. I don't think the new shift rules are going to affect Javier where Fromber Valdez, maybe a couple more balls, get through the hole, things like that. 713-780-ESPN, 7869. I'd love for Corey Lee or Jiner Diaz step up to be the catcher of the future. I would love that, too. I think both guys are going to get an opportunity to do so. I think Corey Lee and Diaz will both get a chance to show that they're the Astros catcher of the future, whether it's in spring training, whether it's throughout the season, because I think that the backup catcher is going to start 40 or 50 games on this team. What about David Hensley? This is a name I've seen a lot of people talk about. I think we overrate David Hensley as a prospect. Like, I think David Hensley is going to be fine as a utility guy. Maybe best case scenario, he's like the Marwin Gonzalez back whenever he was taking signs in 2017. Maybe he's an Aledmys Diaz. David Hensley is going to be 27 years old by opening day. I think that at times we get carried away a little bit with David Hensley's prospects as a big league player.
It's possible, right? I mean, you're more on the side of having to make a longer-term decision quickly with him than you are having patience and bringing a guy along slowly, like if you're talking about a Jiner Diaz or a Corey Lee. You're looking at a guy that, look, for everything that he was last year when you needed him, it was a short stint. And now, as you mentioned, with his age, you got to figure out who he can be and what his ceiling is as quick as possible, because it's going to affect a lot of things as you go forward. Is he just going to be a utility guy? Is he a guy capable of playing a position for you somewhere in the field, if not as a starter, but consistently and as a fill-in starter? Or is he a guy that, you know, is just kind of a jack of all trades but a master of none that you go, well, okay, at his age with what he does, I don't see him getting much better. If I have someone else that I have my eyes on or that someone is in our system that's coming up, as good as, you know, thanks for what you did in 22, but there might not be a long stint for you here because we've got guys that are younger that do what you do.
I wouldn't feel comfortable with Hensley as an everyday guy.
These are Astros blinders. This is the reality of baseball that people have forgotten because of the Astros. The Astros keep bringing up prospects and they're awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the last guy they brought up and you're like, this guy stinks?
John Singleton.
Okay.
Brett Wallace.
John Singleton got added to the 40-man roster of the Brewers.
John Singleton had a problem with the weed.
Who did?
I think John Singleton just is coming back.
He did. He signed with somebody.
I saw that.
Milwaukee. I think it was Milwaukee last year.
But he made the 40-man?
I think they just put him on the 40-man.
Wow, that's
cool.
I'm rooting for him. Hopefully he does well.
David Hensley, it was last year, he is more likely to take a walk than Trey Mancini strike out, and that's why people wanted to play him.
Yeah.
I think if he's Marwin Gonzalez... Mm-hmm.
That's a win.
That's a huge win.
Yeah, that'd be
If he's a Ledmus Diaz, it's a massive win.
Yeah, absolutely.
That'd be awesome.
You're right. We have become spoiled with who the next young up-and-comer is because of Pena, because of Kyle Tucker, because of Christian Javier, because of Luis Garcia, because of Brian Abreu. They have somebody each and every year. This year, it's got to be Hunter Brown or maybe one of the catchers. It's not going to be David Hensley, 27 years old.
But just even look at the bullpen. Look at the guys that he brought up last year that ended up turning out for him. Seth Martinez was a guy no one had heard of. And all of a sudden, he throws Seth Martinez, who was known for, he got his call-up when he was in the Whataburger drive-thru line. And thankfully, he was in the same vicinity from Houston to Sugar Land. But what you found out from Seth Martinez was he was a guy Dusty could trust. That he went in there and he got out.
Yeah, but he used
things.
Him in mop-up roles. His role
Not
was
always.
Very, very limited.
Not always, but nonetheless, look, he succeeded. He could have failed and blown up miserably and been just flash in the pan. But when his number was called, aside from one outing against the Yankees where he gave up a bomb to Aaron Judge, he was pretty much lights out whenever he was put in the game.
David Hensley could, if he has a good season, he would be the hitter equivalent of Seth Martinez. Somebody who's a role player that does well in their role. The Astros are never counting on Seth Martinez to be a 7-8, 9 inning guy. Never to be a high leverage guy.
No, absolutely.
To be a solid arm in the
bullpen. But I'm just saying, there's another success story. A guy that you hadn't heard of that you call up, and when he calls up, he does what he does his job, and he does it well enough that people compliment him. That's rare that you see that across the board with a major league team, that when you call up guys from your farm system and they immediately step in and contribute.
But people are talking about Hensley being a Pena from last year, where it's
stop.
Come on, man. This guy's going to be a utility player that maybe can fill in if there's a short stint on the IL. Who's your guy, Joe George, to take the next step in their Astro career?
It's Javier.
Yeah.
I think the MLB Network, when they did their preseason predictions a month ago, way too early predictions, they said Christian Javier for Cy Young was their prediction, and I actually think that's fair.
I wonder what the numbers are on that right now.
At some point, we're going to do one of these is going to be a more likely Tucker MVP, Alvarez MVP, Christian Javier, Cy Young. Of all of who's going to win a major award, I think I'd go with Javier. His stuff is just
See, that's what I said. I think
so
when,
nasty.
When we were having that conversation about who's going to be the Astros' best pitcher, I thought there was a better chance that Javier would be somewhere in the top 5 to 10 for Cy Young voting than Fromber. He would be above Fromber.
Yeah.
Just because his stuff is nasty.
Plus 2,500 right now. Get for Javier.
We might need to jump on that.
Yeah. That's not a bad call. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Let's get to the Dusty Baker. He wants to stop talking about last year. Is he worried about that hangover? Are you worried about a hangover for the Astros? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.